Hey everybody, Stu Smith here with another Tactical Fitness Report, and we are pleased to have Lieutenant Colonel Nick Barringer back with us again. Thank you, sir.
Hey, Stu, I'm excited to be back. It's been a while, so I'm happy to come back and talk to you.
Yeah, well, thank you again for your time. I know we've both been busy trying to get on each other's schedule again, but let's talk a little bit about the National Strength and Conditioning. There's a program where they focus on tactical athletes, tactical fitness, and it's called the TSAC, right? Where tactical strength and conditioning training, they used to call it a conference, but you know, sometimes military groups can't go to conferences anymore because of whatever reasons. So we call it a training cycle. I missed this year's, but you made it, you spoke there. And, you know, just tell us a little bit about, you know, one, the event itself and about what you and why you decided to talk about performance, nutrition and joint health. Because we're all looking forward to kind of hearing a little bit about the latest research and just some good practices for, you know, being able to use nutrition as a recovery tool and as, you know, a way to improve longevity, especially when it comes to joint health.
Yeah, no, Stu, the tactical, I think they actually even changed the name this year. They call it like the tactical annual training. But yeah, the NSCA, the tactical group, it's so exciting. You've been to, you know, it's grown so much. I was talking to folks, this year, you know, for those that remember the first year, it was just like a few of us and there was one room. There was multiple rooms. I think they had at least like three rooms going of speakers at any given time. They set the record. They had over 500 in attendance, 500 online, record number of vendors, and just some great speakers. Nate Palin did a great talk on mental health. It was very powerful. Rob Orr was there from Bond University. You know,
he's great.
I guess he's a world expert when it comes to load carriage. I can't think of anybody else I would think of when I think of load carriage. Alex Moreau of Mops and Moes, who also works with the Center for Initial Military Training and H2F, Holistic Health and Fitness, standing that up. He gave a great talk. A lot of the holistic health and fitness folks were there, and there was meetings and discussions. There was a lot of great like fire talks from nutrition. John Hoffman was there. I mean, it was a who's who. So if you're in the tactical space, you know, it's a who. Besides Stu Smith,
I miss those things. I really enjoy all those people because you know I go there to you know often speak on some topic and then. I go there to learn. I mean, because there are just so many really smart people that are now putting their efforts and time and money into studying the tactical professions. Because before they had this, I mean, all the money went towards athletes, you know, and it was really a drive after 9/11, really, that kind of drove this transition into the tactical athlete world. Which was obviously needed. And in fact, I do remember the first one. It was a symposium in Colorado Springs with Mark Stevens.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, remember the symposiums? Yeah. Like it must have been like 2008. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure he's the guy that Mark Stevenson, he's the guy that coined tactical fitness. I think that is where it came from.
Yeah, it might have been him. So he was there. Mark gave a great talk as well. Yeah. See, I can't even remember everybody. And there's Donnie Bigham. There was a ton of people. But we actually had that conversation. And it was, I think they had it at the NSCA because the first talk, they didn't have enough people that wanted to sign up. They wanted to do it in Las Vegas. I remember that because, you know, we were kind of tracking. It was going to be in Las Vegas. And then at the last second, it was like at NSCA headquarters. And I think they just didn't have enough people, to be honest. And then even then, I don't know if it was 2009, 2000, you know, that time they had it. I remember it was at the M Resort.
Oh, yeah.
What it was. Yeah. And again, it was like one room. It was just like one room. There's maybe like five vendors. You know, so now to see it come full circle where it was a packed house. I mean, it was at the JW Marriott in the Hill Country, you know, tons of vendors, tons of people. And then even the online, you know, we talk about like 500 people online watching this stuff. I think it's a testament just to the community. And I'm seeing what I'm also like seeing is it was military dominant. Yeah, and then there's still military, we're probably the biggest, but the police, the firefighters, you know, them coming on board, EMS, people working with them. I was excited. There was another dietitian there, Megan Louts. Hopefully I'm saying her name right.
Oh, yeah. She's actually worked out with us before. She's from our neck of the woods. Yeah.
Oh, all right. Yeah. So she does all this great stuff with firefighters. The only complaint with the NSCA, they booked the two dietitians at the same time. So I was talking while Megan was talking, and I wanted to go to her talk.
Oh, that's messed up.
You know, we were laughing. I know. Yeah. I gave them a hard time about it. I don't think they really did. But yeah, so it was a great event.
Yeah. Awesome. So let's talk a little bit about your journey this past year. You said you had an injury that kind of drove more research on this topic.
Yeah. So this has been a few years back. It was actually the last time I was stationed in San Antonio, probably, was that, I don't know, 2016, 2017. I was doing combatives and a freak injury. And I just completely tore my bicep, right? Which that was my first major injury in my life. I've been very lucky. And, you know, so I couldn't use my arm. And you know, they gave me this whole thing about, you know, you need to take your time, you could re-injure it, you know, how to do the surgery, all like that. And for me, I was like, all right, I'm a dietitian. I deal with nutrition. What can I eat so I can heal up as fast as possible? And so that just sent me down a rabbit hole, Stu, where I was just reading articles night after night and everything, you know, that I could find that showed some evidence, whether it be in animals or humans, I was like, okay, I'm doing that. And so I had a complete protocol that I did, you know, day in, day out. And, you know, I healed up and, you know, I can use my arm, do weighted pull-ups, everything fine. Now, whether it was to that nutrition protocol or not, I've since used it. It was funny. I had a buddy who had a bad knee injury and I was like, hey, this is what I did. And so he immediately did it. And so that kind of sent me down a rabbit hole. And I haven't seen a lot of nutrition talks just focusing on joint health. So for this NSCA, this previous one we just had in San Antonio, I probably went through 100 research articles and narrowed it down to about 30 that I found on particular substances. And that's what I gave the audience. And I'm happy to share with the audience listening to this today, who you know, maybe didn't get to go.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. I really appreciate this because, you know, these are closed events, you know, that, you know, is really big information in there, but, you know, obviously there's information that needs to be, you know, worldwide information as well. Not that, you know, this is, you know, information that can't be shared, you know, obviously right. It's just, you know, we are very fortunate to have you to, you know, take this, you know, your, you know, in-depth study and share that with us and maybe even break it down to us to, you know, like a laundry list of things that are very helpful, whether that is a combination of foods and or supplements.
Yeah, no, and glad to share. Again, no top secret nutrition information is going to be shared, but I think there's a lot of great research, you know, on this topic. You know, and one of the substances to dive right into it is collagen. You know, and this is one that's really been looked at and it's evolving. Dr. Keith Barr out of California, he does a lot of this research on there and has got, you know, more going on. But he did a nice study where they looked at collagen and then they had people jump rope and it was either 5 or 15 grams. They had them jump rope for 6 minutes. They drew their blood and they looked at, you know, the stuff that makes up collagen in your body, the proline, hydroxyproline, the glycine, all like this floating around in your blood. You know, the thought being, if we take it, we increase those levels. And then they had an engineered joint that they injected with this to see, okay, do these things go where they need to go? And what they found was 15 grams of collagen with about 48 milligrams of vitamin C. So vitamin C is important for that collagen synthesis. maximize that response. So before exercise, what, you know, would be good if about an hour before, if you could have that about 15 grams of collagen with a little bit of vitamin C, it could be something simple. I've you know, there's products that are sold out there that you can try, but I mean, Jell-O and orange juice, pretty cheap, pretty economical. You know, you could add those two together.
Wow, yeah, that's collagen and vitamin C right there.
And then use that. Yeah, I try to make it accessible for everybody, Stu.
That's a great idea.
But yeah, so, you know, and there's multiple studies. I mean, improve ankle and knee function, accelerating recovery from Achilles injuries. There is a lot with collagen. So that was what I came out of the gate with, and where I'm going to come out of the gate with the listeners here is collagen is something, you know, the example I gave was we eat protein, right? Our muscles made out of protein. You break it down, you eat protein. Well, you know, our joints, our tissues, the collagen's important. We've got the type 1, the type 2, the type 3. So it makes sense to consume collagen to speed up that repair, to give your body what it needs for repair.
Gotcha. Now, what are some of the best foods for that collagen? Because I have just been taking a powdered collagen, you know, supplement that I actually mix in with my Simple Greens. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's a lot of vitamin C, and I mix the collagen together in that, and have been doing it that way for years now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Jell-O is easy. You can get some, like I said, some sugar-free Jell-O, and I've had athletes do this, you know, with that like orange juice concoction if they want to do that, something easy to drink. You know, if you want to eat cartilage of animals or things, I know some people are into that.
That's okay.
You know, yeah, that's a way to do it. But really, probably the easiest way that most people are familiar with is just Jell-O, right?
Nice. Now, what about bone broth? Is that a collagen?
Yeah, you can get that. Yeah, you can get some in there as well. I don't know if, you know, taking bone broth right before I exercise, I'd have to see how that sits on my stomach. And you know, you have to experiment with that. But again, any sort of, you know, food that comes from cartilage or anything like that, or might have some cartilage in it, you're going to get those benefits.
Right. Something I do is I do quinoa, and I flavor it with a beef bone broth.
Okay.
So it's just...
Yeah, get some in, and it's delicious, yeah. And you're getting some complex carbohydrates.
Yeah.
So that was one. You know, the other big one, too, you know, I've talked about was vitamin D, particularly if we're looking at vitamin D, you want the D3. And this was for osteoarthritis. And what the papers found is if you have about 50 nanomoles a liter, and this is why I recommend people get their vitamin D checked. Particularly where you're at, you know, Stu, yep. and when I was at West Point, really getting people, because even research in Texas, Central Texas, I did a study out at Fort Hood for my dissertation, and we looked at vitamin D in soldiers there, and even half of those soldiers were insufficient to deficient in Central Texas. And it makes sense, you know, because we're covered up most of the time. You're outside, or you're putting on sunscreen because you're worried about skin cancer,
sure.
Those sort of things. So you're not getting a lot of it. So that is one that I really recommend getting checked, because we see lower levels. And for that, going super high is not going to help your joints, but it seems that baseline, about 50 nanomoles per liter, if you go get it checked, is where you want to be out to maximize that. Going any higher, but that's kind of like a baseline, you know, if you want to, you know, kind of shield your joints.
Gotcha. Now, do you... supplementation in the winter, recommend that?
Yes.
If you can't get
supplement
sun
in the winter, yeah. Oh, definitely. So that might be one where you amp it up a little bit. So I'm a little more, you know, cautious. Like, you know, in the summer months, I might take, you know, 1,000 IUs of vitamin D just as a baseline, just like that. Whereas like winter, I might go up to 5,000. And that's me personally. I'm not making recommendations for anybody else. Again, I recommend getting, you know, your vitamin D checked so you know what you're working with. Because some people, for instance, if, you know, they're up north and they're not getting much sunlight, might be really low, they might be more aggressive. You might want to go 10,000 IUs to get you up or higher to get you up to that certain level. But I recommend, that's why I recommend getting your blood drawn and then working with the dietitian or your healthcare provider to get it to where it needs to be.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's important. That's an important one. I mean, I have mine right here. You know, just
nice.
Just a little gummy that as soon as I sit at my desk, I'm like, I take my daily stuff because I burn when I get in the sun. Like if I'm going to go get some sun, I might be able to spend 10 minutes and hopefully that's enough vitamin D. Other than that, I try to stay out of it.
Yeah. No, I mean, and it's smart, right? I mean, I'm down in Texas and I'm covered up when I'm out in the sun because it's no joke. You know, you spend too long outside, you're getting burned. So that's another baseline one. And another, one that's, again, what's nice about some of these is you get, you know, benefits many other ways. I mean, vitamin D is good for your muscles, et cetera. But another one that kind of goes hand in hand with that was omega-3 fatty acids.
I was just about to ask you that.
Yeah. So fish oil is in there because there's one of the things with lipid peroxidation. So omega-6s, we know, is more pro-inflammatory. And so you have this lipid peroxidation and you have this malonyldialdehyde. And that can affect the health of the joints. The chondrocytes that are used for the cartilage, they can get damaged from that oxidative damage in that. And that can lead is shown to lead to like osteoarthritis. So individuals who have osteoarthritis typically have this higher level of this malonyldialdehyde in their blood, which is a sign of lipid peroxidation, this lipid being oxidized. And that's also been associated with higher omega-6, because higher omega-6 is, you know, typically what we get in our American diet is going to be more inflammatory, whereas the omega-3s are more anti-inflammatory. So one of, again, the thoughts being is if we can take in more omega-3s, we can adjust that so we have less lipid peroxidation that can cause some of that damage that can lead to osteoarthritis. You also get cardiovascular benefits, a lot of other benefits, even muscle. There's a guy, Dr. Jeff Heilson, who does a lot of research with muscle health that is shown looking at omega-3 fatty acids. So, yeah, I mean, there's other things, but for joint health is also something you want to look at taking in.
Yeah, that's a big one. I mean, our last discussion we had was on longevity. And yep. I mean, that your care of your joints couldn't be more important with the longevity goal, but as well as optimal performance too. But chances are, you know, where you really see the bang for the buck is after 20 years of use, 40 years of use, and you're still able to move fluidly without significant, you know, reduction of the joint interior.
Right. And you bring up a great point, Stu, and this, and one of the studies I'll mention here in a little bit is like, it's going to take a long time, right? This isn't something, you know, you take for a week and all of a sudden, hey, I feel better. If so, that's great. The placebo effect is powerful. I'll take the win. But this is something, you know, a lot of these things, yeah, you're going to have to do chronically. You know, it's going to take some time, like you said, and it's better for the folks listening to this who's on the younger end of the spectrum who are not having those pains yet to get this stuff dialed in. So over time, they don't develop it. Because it's kind of like, you know, when you develop it, we'll talk, there's some things you can do. It's not too late, but it's much harder to correct once the damage is already done.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And all it really takes is, you know, somewhere along your running trail, you know, that you run, if you're in a community and you go for a run in this path, you're going to see runners, you're going to see bikers, you're going to see walkers, and you're going to see older people probably not running, right? And they will tell you, oh, I wish I could do that. I remember sometimes we'll do a lot of lunges, you know, when we're running around, we're doing these walking lunges, and we always get comments of like, oh, my knees would never handle that, you know. And, you know, I was like, hopefully I can still do this. You know, I'm still doing it at 53. Hopefully I'll be able to still do it at 73. So
Yeah, no, I mean, there's something to be said that, you know, what is it? Motion is lotion. You keep, keep moving it.
Yes.
So that's good. But one of the things, you know, another thing for joint health that's also out there, I mentioned briefly when we talk about collagen, the proline, hydroxyproline, and glycine, but glycine seems to be the amino acid that's really important for kind of, building those tissues and making sure that giving collagen its strength. So making sure individuals get in enough glycine is important. Now you get a lot of that from protein. So to give you an example, like 7 ounces of salmon might give you, you know, about 2.5 grams of glycine. Now the authors of one review paper I read, they recommend going up to 10 grams. I don't know if I, you know, completely would say that would be good for everybody to maintain that level. I mean, it's not going to hurt anything or you have to. I would, you know, more like 3 to 5 grams per day. Now, if you have an injury and you're recovering from that injury, that's where I would definitely go up to 10 grams because now we're trying to rebuild that tissue.
Okay. And you say the glycine makes the collagen stronger.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's what gives it its strength.
Okay.
And you can get supplemental glycine that's pretty cheap. So if you were somebody like listening that's recovering from an injury, it might be worth to look at it that way, or you know, in terms of supplementation. Or you could also up your protein intake. That's where you find most of the glycine is protein. So you know, you just eat more chicken, eat more fish to get that in there.
So whenever we talk about collagen and glycine and rebuilding the joint, we're really talking about or protecting the joint. We're really talking about the soft tissues such as tendons, ligaments, cartilage, right? Synovial fluid. Right. Is it synovial fluid in there?
So synovial fluid is in there, but really, yeah, the tendons, the ligaments, that cartilage is kind of what we're looking at for that overall health, right? So we want, you know, everything gliding smoothly in there. And so, you know, again, what is all these kind of nutrition things have in common is in one way or another, they either, you know, kind of, you know, shield the cartilage from, you know, oxidation, like in the case of omega-3s or breakdown, or they actually improve its strength, like glycine, like collagen. So there's a combination of different ways to attack it. And as we'll even talk later on, there's some that can affect the inflammatory processes that cause pain in there as well. And might can help with some of the joint pain as well.
Nice.
Another kind of background player in joint health I found that was kind of interesting was vitamin K, you know, which we typically think of, you know, with clotting. What it does, it keeps... you know, kind of the calcification of the joints that happens. So vitamin K plays an important role in making sure, you know, calcium goes where it needs to go and doesn't go where it doesn't need to go.
Right.
And why, you know, I really highlighted this at the TSAC with tactical athletes because, you know, I used to, as part of an old job, was I reviewed the MRE vitamins and minerals. You know, I looked at like what was, you know, in MREs and make sure it meets that criteria.
That's huge.
Yeah, well,
I'm glad somebody's doing that.
No, they have it. No, the people at Combat Feeding are unbelievable. You know, Dr. Gaffney Somberg's over it, and I mean the science that goes in is mind blowing. But one of the areas that's the MRE everybody knows that it's low in is vitamin K because where do you get vitamin K? Leafy greens. It's hard to put leafy greens in that, you know, in that box to withstand the heat, and they're looking at ways to get that in there. But that's why. The picture I painted is you have, you know, some sort of infantry war fighter who's going out to the field a lot, eating MREs, not getting a lot of vitamin K. Then they come back from the field, they're on recovery, they're eating a lot of convenient foods, probably not getting any leafy greens, you know, and they're doing this over a career with the load carriage and all the things that go in. You can kind of see how they're setting themselves up for osteoarthritis.
Damn.
So that's why it's important. And we're not talking about, you know, a high dose. We're talking 90 micrograms a day for women, 120 micrograms a day for men. I mean, half a cup of broccoli.
Right. Yeah. Like you break it down to a serving size.
It's not that hard to get it in, but it's important. And this is one of those things that, okay, if I eat half a cup of broccoli for a week, am I going to be Superman? No. But this is something that you need to program as part of your diet and keep in chronically, because you're playing the long game, right?
Nice.
So that was, one that was kind of nice.
I will say in our family, broccoli is probably eaten at least 5 days a week.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just one of those things that, one, it's easy to make. Yeah, just put it on a little steamer or eat it raw. And, everybody loves it. Even my little kids, when they were younger, it was part of like that. And then I get a little creative. If you have kids and you're trying to get creative with stuff, you can buy cauliflower. But cauliflower, believe it or not, comes in multiple colors. Right. Yeah. There's a orange cauliflower. There's a purple cauliflower. And my daughter loved purple, when she was like 3 or 4 years old, and she would basically call it purple broccoli. And it was just fun, to introduce your kids to really healthy foods and just make it fun for them,
I cook with my daughter, and that's like our thing. She likes to pick exotic foods. She's very adventurous. She's like one of the most adventurous 6-year-olds. You can make it fun incorporating the stuff in the diet.
Yeah. I used to make, smiley faces with food. Broccoli eyeballs.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, it's good. It's good to get creative.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but please keep going on, because I love your where you're going with this.
Yeah, so another one that kind of popped up, and this one was surprised people, was bromelain, right? You get pineapple, and it was a powerful, kind of pain mediator for osteoarthritis, and there was a lot of studies where it went head to head with a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. So a lot of NSAIDs, and it would score just as well as the NSAIDs, but the group that took the bromelain had less side effects than you have with NSAIDs. I found that pretty interesting. But one thing that I couldn't find, if anybody listening to this could find this out there, is how much bromelain you can expect to get from pineapple. And I think part of that is because I found out that most of the supplemental bromelain you get, it comes from the stem. So there's more bromelain in the stem than there is in the actual fruit. Huh. So, I can't tell you. Sadly, I would love to be on here and be like, hey, have 4 slices of pineapple a day. You're good. It's delicious and all like that. So I don't know that. I'll kind of wrap up the dose at the end. It's one where if you're using it as for pain or is an anti-inflammatory, you're probably going to have to use a supplement. Doesn't hurt to eat some pineapple. Never hurts some pineapple, right? Really high in vitamin C, like we talked about. What was fascinating, looking at the research, I mean, there was a faster recovery rate from ankle injuries, reduced swelling, all like this with bromelain. And again, in a lot of the studies, it was going head-to-head with NSAIDs. And it's used in Europe quite a bit. They use it both for that reasons, and then even with burns, they use topical bromelain for that. So that was one I felt like a lot of people hadn't thought about, and so I was kind of happy to share that.
Topical bromelain for quicker healing of burns?
Yeah, debridement and some of the stuff that goes on. Now this isn't like sunburns. I didn't again, something I didn't know was being used, and so I guess in Europe it's prescribed and used quite a bit. Huh. But for pain particularly, it seems to really make a difference. And then what's nice is you're not using NSAIDs. Not to say if you need those, if you require those, by all means use them. That's important. But I think most folks, if there was something out there like bromelain or something that they could take and not have to take NSAIDs, that would be a nice exchange.
Nice.
The other one, and this was kind of the ones that I think everybody's heard of, like, is the glucosamine chondroitin sulfate, right?
Yeah. I don't
know if you're taking that, but that's, you know, one of the more popular ones, and for multiple reasons in terms of, you know, it does increase collagen synthesis. It does help with the organization of those collagen bundles, right? Like how it's tightly organized. So when you recover, you know, there's not, you know, if there's scar tissue and things like that, that collagen is not going to function like it should. Whereas with the glucosamine chondroitin sulfate, it can help it heal up, you know, the way it should. And then it also can help with pain. But one study in particular, and granted, this was an animal study, but this would be really hard to do in humans. They looked at the tendon to bone healing. So they took these rabbits and they basically, you know, tore the tendons from the bones, reattached them. One group either got a placebo, one group got a glucosamine chondroitin, and they did this for 12 weeks. And at the end of 12 weeks, they hooked it again and they looked at how much force it took to pull it back, you know, to pull it off.
Oh, great test.
And again, and that's why I say I get it. At, you know, when I was talking to the folks at the NSCA, I was like, hey, I get it. You guys aren't rabbits, but there would be some ethical issues if you did this in humans, right? So, you know, can't do a study like that in humans. But what they found is the group that had the glucosamine chondroitin, it took more force to pull it. And then it was pulling at the muscle tendon juncture. It never came off the bone, where all the ones in the placebo group all came off the bone. So again, I found that study, you know, pretty interesting when we're talking about healing and getting things, you know, structurally back to where they need to be. Now, the, you know, thing I'll say is the dose they were taking it at, the animals, I converted it to what a human would be. And it's about, you know, 9 times to 10 times what your normal dose would be. All right. And it would cost an individual about $9 a day of glucosamine chondroitin sulfate to replicate this.
Damn.
And Stu, when I did that in my head, I almost threw out the paper. I was like, all right. And but then I thought about it and I was like, people spend that at Starbucks. People spend that at, you know, different things. And if you had a catastrophic injury, now this was over 12 weeks, it might be worth $9 a day investing to make sure, you know, to do everything you can to get that, to maximize that healing. So I'm going to leave it in there. You know, I just
that makes great sense.
But just to let people know, if they look at that paper, because I can give you all these references if folks want to, you know, read it for themselves. Now for the doses for, you know, increased collagen synthesis and pain, et cetera, it's a much more reasonable dose that you're seeing out there. But for this particular dose that they used in those rabbits, it was quite high. I think for an 80 kilogram human, you know, the average individual, it'd be about 17 grams of glucosamine and 14 grams of chondroitin. So it is high. So I'll give folks that. But again, if you're really looking to maximize healing, that might be worth it.
Damn. Yeah, I've always heard about glucosamine, and, you know, I've taken it, you know, I haven't taken it consistently forever. You know, it seems like when I do, it's like I need it. So would you say a consistent, like, steady dose of that would be a wise?
That would be a wise, particularly if you're worried about joint pain. And I can, you know, for glucosamine chondroitin, you're looking about 1500 milligrams a day. That's kind of the background dose that, you know, is recommended in most studies. I kind of seen around that range.
Gotcha.
Another one is the methylsulfonyl methane, the MSM. It is also another anti-inflammatory. It also reduces pain. And then the other great thing, you know, we talked about that malonyl-D-aldehyde that causes that oxidative damage. It also helps lower that as well. And there was a study, it was 118 individuals with mild to moderate osteoarthritis. Over 12 weeks, they were consuming the MSM. well tolerated, you know, didn't have any issues. The other thing, MSM's absorbed very well. It's rapidly absorbed. They had less pain, less swelling in the MSM group. So again, this is another one that you could, you know, kind of look at it, you know, for instead of an NSAID route, if you want to kind of try to go, you know, I hate to say the more natural route or however you want to look at it, this might be something else that the kind of, you know, try, particularly with that pain mitigation.
Hey, I know that there are, you know, some of these substances are made by the body and mm-hmm. some are you have to consume them in order to get them in their body. Can you differentiate some of those as we go through them? Like glucosamine chondroitin, for instance, is it a occurring substance in the body that we can make, or is it something that we have to consume?
That's a great question, Stu. I, you know, off the top of my head, but I don't know if, yeah. I mean, it is in the body. I don't know if we're actively making it or if we're getting it from the, you know, all the foods that we consume.
Right.
I imagine a lot of the collagen stuff, you have to get that from your diet.
Sure.
Vitamin K, you do make vitamin K in your gut, in
right.
your gut bacteria. One of the other interesting things though, for, you know, not to call out our young war fighters again, something that can inhibit vitamin K production in the gut is alcohol. Can affect that. So like alcoholics don't really produce any vitamin K.
Wow.
And so that's another thing is, you know, if you have a young soldier not eating a lot of greens and they're binge drinking, you know, it sets up a scenario where their vitamin K isn't optimal.
That can affect a lot of things. I mean, that can affect a lot of health issues. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. So I'd have to go back and look. I'd have to get on that.
I was just curious. You know, sometimes I like to see, like, sometimes there's a particular food that helps us or a particular substance that, you know, a supplement that helps us make, you know, hormones better or,
yeah,
you know, things like that. So I was just like vitamin D, for instance, you know, like we can make vitamin D from the sun, you know,
but it's hard when you're, you know, covered up.
And right.
For vitamin D, hopefully I hit again. It's D3.
Right.
For some reason, D2. I've seen that prescribed at military health clinics for some reason. It's like it's not going to make your vitamin D levels budge. Make sure you're getting D3.
Interesting.
Is important. You know, almost, you know, gonna wrap this up, but a couple other things that I found. One, will sound familiar to some folks, was curcumin.
Oh, yeah.
Again, for pain.
Big fan.
Big fan. But what was interesting with this was with type 2 diabetics and people who have poor blood glucose control, you get those advanced glycolation end products, right? And those can get lodged in the collagen and affect its strength. And make it, you know, more weak and more likely to tear.
Huh.
So, you know, there's obviously a lot of different health issues with type 2 diabetes and having your blood glucose out of control. But that's one of the also the side effects. And this has been repeated in animal models. And curcumin actually prevents this. So they've done studies with animals where they have. They basically induce diabetes, type 2 diabetes, and then they give them curcumin, and they find that it prevents those advanced glycolation end products that they would get in there and make that structure weaker, so you can kind of maintain that integrity. And again, why I say that is for the individuals out there who, you know, are type 2 diabetic, maybe aren't, you know, gained a little more weight than they would like and are fighting through those issues, but are trying to get back in shape, this might be a good thing to kind of take to make sure, hey, my joints are, you know, the collagen's going to be healthy in them, along with some other, you know, benefits as far as being an antioxidant as they work to lose that weight or to get their blood glucose under control.
That's really interesting because, you know, you see some inflammation in those, you know, in type 2 diabetes that, you know, affects joint health, obviously, but, you know, but wound care is also a big issue with diabetics. Are you is there any evidence in that, you know, like these substances also helping with just typical surface wound care? Because it is collagen, for instance. It's, you know, it helps with skin.
Yeah, I don't know if for that I would have to look specifically. You know, there is some stuff with curcumin and wound care that's out there. But in this case, for these specific papers I reviewed, it was more for that, you know, the health and the preventing those glycolation end products from kind of getting in the collagen.
Gotcha.
Now, as we talked about, I think we mentioned last time, is you know, curcumin has that poor bioavailability. So, you know, taking it, you know, with pepperine or pepper or there's, you know, now more products out there where manufacturers, if you're looking at it in supplementation form, are finding ways to make it more bioavailable to get more into your bloodstream. But I thought that was nice just because we kind of talked about it last time. And you know, it's like vitamin D or omega-3s, a lot of these things. It's not just one thing. You know, they do a lot of different things. And so hopefully if people were on the fence last time, they hear this, here's something else, here's another reason to maybe look at incorporating this.
Yeah, that was an interesting fact that you taught us last time with the pepperdine in the curcumin, because now when I'm, you know, getting curcumin in the store, I'm like, I look on the back, oh, there's pepperdine in it. You know, so they are getting smarter out there with the, but the supplement companies are listening to you.
I don't know if they're listening to me, but yeah, I mean, you know, any reputable company that knows these sort, they're going to be looking at this and know it and, you know, put it. And so it's also a good quick check, you know, for individuals, you know, just like you did, is like, hey, if I'm going to use a curcumin supplement, I look and I don't see that on the label, I'm just going to put it back down and I'm going to move to the next one. Because that, in you know, that company's thinking about profit, they're not really thinking about the product. And you know, I can say that.
Good point.
The last kind of thing I'll wrap up with in terms of what I found that I really liked, and this is something I eat every day for breakfast, is blueberries.
Nah.
So there had been a bunch of, you know, animal studies I've seen where, you know, they would induce osteoarthritis in these animals and they would feed them blueberry powder. And they found that when they got more blueberry powder, they had significant reduced signs of pain. The animals could walk better, all these sort of things. And so that was all well and good, but again, we're not rats, right? But there was a great study where they looked at individuals age 45 to 79, so pretty good age spread. And they had symptomatic knee osteoarthritis, and they were fed 40 grams of freeze-dried blueberries for 4 months or a placebo powder. And one of the things I like to put out again, this is 4 months. That's a pretty long, you know, quote unquote, you know, supplement study, if you will. But that's why, you know, these things take time. And what did they find out at the end was the groups that got the blueberry powder were able, had less joint stiffness. They were able to perform daily activities of daily living, like, you know, putting on your clothes, getting dressed more easily. They had better gait. This was kind of a cool study because they actually looked at the gait analysis, how the people walked. They had a better gait
pattern. Nice.
And then an overall, you know, improved quality of life from eating blueberries every day.
That's huge.
This is like my favorite. Yeah, this is something very easy to do. And we're not talking about a lot. That would be, you know, a cup of blueberries, maybe like frozen blueberries. I mean, again, theirs was freeze dried. I imagine just for ease to give to people, you know, a freeze dried powder, boom. But hey, we all can go to the store, whatever your local grocery store, I promise, go to the frozen food section. You can get frozen blueberries. You can add them to oatmeal. You can add them to yogurt. You can add them, you know, to almost anything. There was like, it was funny. I canvassed the crowd because I was like, does anybody not like blueberries? And there was like 2 hands out of 100 people. You know, so if you don't like it, you can blend it in a smoothie.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, you can hide it outside of the color. You'll probably still get some of the blue color. But I think most people like blueberries. So if you were looking for a reason to eat blueberries, there you go.
Nice. I love it. Yeah, I usually do like raspberries or blueberries on top of a salad.
Oh, yeah.
Just make it easy. Add a little fruit in there.
Can't go wrong.
Or my Froyo. Like, I'll go get Froyo and put blueberries on it. That's good. That's a good little dessert.
We did Froyo last night with the kids. but sadly, Daddy was the only person that put blueberries on yogurt. There was other, like, sprinkles and, you know. So, I you can't win them all, Stu. You can't win them all.
You got to live a little.
Yeah. But no. So those are kind of the main things. So, if you don't mind, I'll go through it. We got curcumin, 1,500 milligrams a day. Divided up into about 3-500 milligram doses, again, because we want to maximize that bioavailability or absorption as much as we can. So splitting that up. Gelatin, 15 grams 1 hour before exercise with some vitamin C. We're not talking about a large dose. We're talking about around 50 milligrams of vitamin C. So you don't need vitamin C in grams, just 50 milligrams with that gelatin will help. The vitamin D, about 1,000 IUs, that's more, a little more than the RDA. I think, it's at 800. It's a dose that's not too high. It's safe. Remember, it's a fat soluble vitamin, because I know some people take a lot more than that. Some people are like, well, that's really low, Nick. But you need to respect fat soluble vitamins. So I still would say work with somebody, get your blood checked, because you might want to be more aggressive, right? Yeah. And so that's one where I say, hey, get it checked.
That's wise.
But 1,000 IUs is, probably good baseline. Blueberries, we covered about a cup a day. For the MSM, 1 to 3 grams, I would break that up into 2 to 6 500 milligram doses. Glucosamine chondroitin sulfate, 1,500 milligrams a day. For glycine, as a baseline, eat high glycine foods. That's going to be chicken, fish, beef. If you need to go up to 10 grams a day, you might be able to increase your protein, or it might be easier at that point to get a supplement. Vitamin K, 90 micrograms a day if you're a female, 120 if you're a male. Pretty easy to get in there. Bromelain, the dose is about 1,000 milligrams a day. And then your omega-3s, 1 to 2 grams a day. And you can either get that through a supplement or, eat some fish. Sardines are great. I'm trying to get people on the sardine kick. I'm trying to, small non-predatory fish, low in mercury.
Huh.
Bigger fish that eat other fish, higher in mercury, right? So.
Wow. That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, because where are they, they're eating the algae and the things, where this all starts, right? The pure omega-3s, whereas, with the things in the water and et cetera. So those little sardines, they might have a little bit of, mercury in them, minor amounts. But then that big fish that comes along and eat them, that tuna or whatever, now, it's getting multiplied. It's getting exponential. So you're going to see higher, or shark. Like, if you look at shark's probably the one that has shark and swordfish are the higher levels of mercury if you look at fish.
Wow.
Because they eat other fish that have, so.
Interesting.
Something to think about. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I love it the way you do this because, you have a PhD in performance nutrition and, you are able to break it down to us in a way that you obviously show us that there are scientific data to support this, but then you're able to drop it down a notch and say, eat a banana. Eat blueberries. that is where, your, education has become not only, important on the scientific side, but also useful for everyday consumers of food, which we have to do. So, yeah. Thank you.
I appreciate that, Stu, because that's honestly what I try to do. Because I am not a one of these like great researchers. I can do some research, but I'm not at this super high level. Where I think I can be a benefit is I can take some of that stuff and break it down to where it's more palatable, and then hopefully get the word out to the war fighters, the tactical athletes, who are busy training and doing these things and maybe not reading these journals. So they know, okay, this is what I need to eat when I go out and do what I need to do.
No, man, I really do appreciate it. You know, your time, first of all, is very valuable, and I thank you for sharing your information. Any last piece of advice, like where can people find more about Nick Behringer?
I am on Instagram, nickbehringer.phd.something on there.
I follow you. Thanks, dude.
but the one plug I'll throw out is if anybody's interested in being a dietitian, so for my Army job, I am the program director for the master's program in nutrition. And, you know, we take folks into the Army, you spend 2 years with us, you get to learn about nutrition, you learn exercise physiology, and you come out with a master's degree from Baylor, and then you're guaranteed employment for 5 years. So, you know, reach out to me, if you're interested in that. Yeah. Half our class this last year was prior service. So we're getting a lot of like prior enlisted or even officers coming from other, branches that,
that master's, are they an officer in the Army after that? Okay.
Yes, sir.
Cool. Yeah, so you got your own nutrition corps.
They come in. Yeah. We fall under medical specialty. So all the physical therapists, occupational therapists, physician assistants, and dietitians are in this specialty corps. And, it's a great deal in that they get commissioned. They come in as second lieutenants because they already have their undergrad degree. They do the basic officer, et cetera. And then they come to our program. Like I said, they're with us for 2 years and they're learning in the classroom, going out to hospitals, getting experience. We have a really cool lab. We've got a DEXA that does the body scans, different ways to do body composition. So they learn all that. And then, they're on their way with a master's degree in nutrition from Baylor. And, they serve 5 years. And then after that, they can either stay in and keep doing it like I did, or, get out and do other things. So I really think it's not a bad deal. And you come out with no student loan debt. So
hey, there you go. It's even better. Mm-hmm. Earn that student loan.
Yes, sir.
Love it.
So, yeah.
I love it. Well, thank you very much. I think that is, a great program. Obviously, needed program. Very fascinated with the whole MRE group that you mentioned. That's I'd like to hear more about that sometime. Just breakdown of what the MRE is and how you guys have scientifically managed that. That'd be a really cool one.
Yeah, we can talk about it. Maybe we can get somebody from there on because it really is a great. They're the unsung heroes of, fueling war fighters. People like to pick on the MREs, but I tell you what, I used to make fun of MREs until, they're in Natick, Massachusetts. And I went over there and saw everything they did and all the work that goes into those MREs. And then I was kind of like, okay, I get it now, so.
Yeah, now you have a podcast too, right? I've seen you pop up on a podcast. What is the name of your podcast again?
Oh, it's Fuel the Fight.
Fuel the Fight.
Yeah, humble podcast. We talk about nutrition and tactical stuff. We got to get you on. Yeah, So we talk about nutrition and fitness. Nothing too fancy. Sometimes.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, thank you. So everybody. Thanks for listening, but also, thanks for your time. Lieutenant Colonel Nick Behringer, U.S. Army. Now you are at Baylor as a program manager or a professor? What is your routine there?
I am the program director. So one of the confusing things, we accredit through Baylor. So you get our degree from it, but we're at Joint Base San Antonio. So I am in San Antonio, Texas.
Okay.
At the Medical Center of Excellence with the other programs, but our Baylor partners participate with us and do it. And, every so often we go up there and get to watch it, Baylor football game.
There you go. Cool. Yeah. Well, hey, thank you so much again. I think it's your third time coming on, and every time is just fascinating and very educational. So I appreciate you sharing that information with us.
Oh, my pleasure, Stu. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Until next time, everybody, this is the Tactical Fitness Report signing off, and we'll chat with you later.